Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And I was just distracted by watching myself on my phone for this live Ustream thing. Hey, thanks if you're joining us on Ustream.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. You get to see our beautiful faces.
It's not just about the audio anymore. We can make visual jokes now.
Right, exactly.
Not describe you can see them.
You can see us flipping each other off during segments. And
I have to be very careful about what I do during the podcast. I can't like zone out.
Right. Sometimes he just makes out with his girlfriend.
Or just roll my eyes.
Yeah.
Sometimes he just leaves.
Sometimes he leaves. And we're like, and Drew and I try to hold it together.
I think this is exciting for people to see our t-shirts because all of us do. At times we'll have lots of t-shirts. So
we do. We plan
far
our
too
t-shirt.
Many t-shirts.
I'm like, ooh, I can't wear that t-shirt today because I had the podcast on Wednesday. I was kind of hoping to wear that.
Yeah. It's the way of bragging. It's, you know, it's pretty awesome. I myself am wearing the undershirt I wore to work today, so there's that. I'm pretty stylish.
Because I'm pretty sure Tyler probably just got finished with like a 18-mile run. He's like, oh, you know, I had to keep in shape, had this 18-mile run, came home, ate broccoli and kale.
Tonight is going to be roasted squash and a meatless burger. So,
that sounds disgusting.
It's delicious.
Barbecue.
I learned today, I went to the doctor finally for my foot that I injured when I ran the marathon, and I learned today that I had not one but two bone spurs in my foot. So
plantar
that's why it's been so painful.
You have that fasciitis thing that
I literally have a chipped bone that sticks out like a hangnail, so whenever I run it depresses that bone into my foot. So it's
speaking
kind
of like, depression,
sad that that
this conversation this conversation is depressing me.
It's kind of like I have horns in my foot.
This conversation is a bone spur in my psyche.
Yeah.
Hey guys, before we get into our episode this week, which is of course, as Tyler just alluded to, horns.
Did he like give it away?
He gave it away.
Spoiler alert.
I give it away now.
Follow us on Twitter at HorriblePCast, HorriblePCast.
That's what I'm doing right now is I'm finding the Horrible Podcast so I can retweet our tweet about you streaming.
And then Facebook with the Horrible Podcast. You know, give us some love on there. We have like 100 followers. I know you're out there, Twitter.
Yes.
Not that it really gives a shit about Facebook. Come on. I mean, right? You know, fuck you. Guy's name who
Zuckerberg?
Zuckerberg.
Oddly enough, a social network alumni in horns.
What?
Isn't the best friend from the social network?
Yes, he is. One of the, what is his name? He's the Max Langella. What's his name?
Yeah, Mingela is
Mingela. Yeah, Max Langella. Langella.
Like Mingela's son.
So, also, we're at thehorriblepodcast.com if you want to just go to our website. And hey, you know what? I'll go ahead and plug this too. I just got finished with the film festival, but got another film festival coming up here, Chattanooga Film Festival.
In April, we're already plugging the April film festival.
6 months. It was a long time for people to submit.
That's true.
You know,
submit films, yeah.
Submit films. Go to ChattanoogaFilmFest.com. You can look for us on Film Freeway. That's where we're doing all our submissions this year. So come check us out and submit your film. And I mean, we fucking love horror, so, you know, you've got those shorts out there, send them in. Or if you got features, too, you know, just do it, whatever. Hey, tonight's episode?
Horns.
I'm kind of surprised, Brian, that you didn't call him Max Mingela.
I didn't even know what you guys were talking about.
Oh,
I was like, oh, I can't even make these jokes. The only Mingela I know of is Joseph. And you're talking about him.
I was trying to think of a way to work Joseph Mengele's name into the conversation, but I think you did it so sweetly, so gently.
Smooth up in you.
Yeah. So I was kind of worried about this movie because it got some not so stellar reviews. But
Film Drunk, worst movie of the year.
Really?
Hands down is what they said. Yeah. Mm. Flat out F.
I don't agree with that.
But I don't disagree with it either.
Really?
Like when I was reading, I'm not jumping all over this movie like a lot of people are. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I liked it. I didn't not like it. I thought some things worked, and I thought it got weaker as it went along, I think is possibly more of my problem with anything, is I really liked it, and then by the end of it, I was like, oh, okay.
I would say definitely the best Daniel Radcliffe lovemaking scene that I've ever seen It was amazing.
How many have you seen?
You've never seen Equus then.
I know.
I have not seen Equus, no. But in The Woman in Black, he banged that ghost.
That's so. Right.
The ghost gave him a stranger.
I actually really, maybe I don't deserve to be on the podcast. I liked it. I kind of dug this movie.
Well, once again, guys, we're not a review podcast. We just talk about films. So,
I really dug it. I think it ended abruptly, but it didn't end abruptly. So I'm kind of, I was dismayed by how the movie ended up because it didn't, I thought the ending in the movie, in the book was way more interesting. And I don't quite like the ending in the movie as much, but I liked it for the most part until the very end. I was kind of with it, man. I thought there were some kind of neat parts. I watched it with Kate, and I was afraid that she was going to like figure out the ending halfway through, and I was going to feel like a dumbass because I didn't when I was reading the book. So I was constantly on edge, like for her to go like, "Oh, the killer is blah." And
but I don't think that would be a problem on your part. I mean, I think that comes down to storytelling and difference there too. I don't know that there is as much. I don't know how many clue if it is as clued in the book as much.
Did both of you guys read it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read it.
I really liked it.
I liked it a lot.
I haven't.
It's only Joe Hill's second book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, third, technically, if you count 20th Century Ghosts.
Oh, I'm not counting that.
Okay. Then counting that. Book.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't count as a novel, I guess. I mean, it's his third.
It's his third release. Yeah.
Second novel.
I've had sort of a weird relationship with his books because I've always really enjoyed them but sort of left afterwards with a weird feeling like I didn't quite like it as much as I wanted to. I think Heart-Shaped Box is still my favorite of his books.
I was gonna say I think that one I can't quite figure out how this became a movie before that,
right?
You know,
like
the
that makes a much simpler story to tell and a much more obvious, easy story to tell too. I mean that's part of the problem as well as the early charm of this movie is it's a difficult thing to pull off, like tonally and I mean, and I think it does. The one thing the movie does is a good job of doing that early, but that's what I don't understand. Like, I think Heart-Shaped Box would be much simpler. Plus, it's got the cool badass, you know, the heavy metal, you know, Aussie-ish heavy metal guy. That'd be a great character for somebody to do. Oh man, that'd be awesome.
I didn't like Heart-Shaped Box because, as Tyler knows, I hate Nirvana. So
I saw that one coming. Just kind of.
I think Tom Hiddleston, after Only Lovers Left Alive, I think he would make for a great. What is his name? I've already forgotten.
Vince Coyne.
Yeah, I think he would make for a great Vince Coyne. You said.
Judas.
Judas Coyne, that's right. I think he'd make for a great Judas Coyne. He was a great rock star.
No, he's not big enough. Picture someone
like Danzig.
Yeah.
Like Glenn Danzig, but taller.
More hulking kind of, but hey! but with that hangdogishness too. Like I don't know, like that the look of Hiddleston in that, but if Hiddleston could beef up to like Tom Hardy proportions.
Yeah.
Possibly. I envisioned at least.
I like Joe Hill's books, but I think the ideas are always better than the execution, and like the last act. I always like them, and I enjoy them, enjoy reading them, but I don't quite love. I've never quite loved them.
He can't close like his father.
I don't know, man. There's just something like Drew really liked Nosferatu, and I did too, but
I really like it.
Yeah, I don't know.
What a conversation around that table is like on holidays.
Well, I think you can do an impression at least.
Do your best,
Joe. You lunkhead! What are you doing writing this shit? Is his real first name Joe?
No. Yeah.
This is middle name, right? No, it's Joe Hill King.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because that's
Tabitha's maiden name, right?
Name.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Came from there. Gotcha.
And so it. I mean, I like the premises to his books. I think they're really interesting, and they're way more modern than the like his dad still writes books that sort of could exist in the 70s. Joe Hill's books are way more modern. But I do like that Stephen King will reference like Judas Coyne in his own novels, and that's I think that's sort of neat. But
it's perfectly the way he does reference his own works anyway. I mean, he
what would that be like to have you and your dad as writers?
Well, and brother too, Owen and mother.
And the whole family full of writers. Yeah. Like if you go like, well, I decided what I'm majoring in college, I hope it's English. No. Fuck. I'm going to be an accountant.
That's your weapon, man. You throw that shit at it all the time. When you have the bigger bestsellers, you know you're throwing that shit out. And, you know, it's like, oh, how much did Double Feature sell?
Oh, hey,
I mean,
Dad.
It's a good novel, Owen. It's a good novel. Trust me. But
hey, Dad, I think let me pick up Thanksgiving dinner this year. No, we got it. No, I saw how fucking 11/22/63 sold last year. So let me get this.
How'd you choose that one?
I don't know.
That's a good one. I was going to say that I think Nosferatu, in my mind, Nosferatu and Dr. Sleep are contemporaries. Mm-hmm. And like they seem like the novels that sort of come together at the same time. And I like Nosferatu better than I do Dr. Sleep. I like Dr. Sleep, but I didn't love it. So
I think it's interesting. I think Daddy King does something there that
that's creepy. The way you say that, Daddy King,
something felt wrong.
Something was way off there.
I think he does something though that Joe has done a little bit more in his.
Mom.
I think
gross.
The one thing that we've always seen is Stephen King's he's a bastard to his characters. And Dr. Sleep is the nicest he's ever been. More people survive without permanent maiming. I mean, it's really non-Stephen King, like in the sense of like at the end of it, it's like, oh, and everything was pretty much all right for most everybody.
It's a cash and carry world.
I'm going to I won't spoil the book, but that's there's that element of looming dread that exists in the novel Duma Key that I expected in Dr. Sleep. There's a very specific moment in Duma Key that I expected also to kind of happen in Dr. Sleep, but it did not. And I was kind of underwhelmed by it not happening, if that makes any sense.
Duma Key's super underrated.
I like Duma Key a lot.
It's a really great novel.
So guys, hey, thanks for tuning into the Stephen King podcast.
Well, I think it's important for us to sort of like give a background of like why we picked this movie, and Joe Hill and I guess Alexander Aja and he's made some of the most interesting horror movies. Well, a couple of the most interesting horror movies the last 10 years or so. But
Hot Tension is High Tension would fit. I mean, it would fit in my when I was trying to do a brief right off the top of my head list of early 2000s movies that horror movies that really jump out to me, and that's still one that makes that top.
The first half of it especially.
Oh yeah. I mean that's the thing. I won't do away with it for its narrative missteps there at the end that negates
the weird things.
But because the first part of it before that reveal, it's so effective.
Yeah.
I mean, more effective than anything I've seen in years, honestly, until that reveal. And then you can't ever watch it again. It's like you can't take it back. But those moments before are like, this is so frightening.
I also think that movie,
Boots novel, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I also think, yeah, that's right. Velocity.
Yeah, I think so.
I also think that it's one of the most intensity. Maybe. Yeah,
I think so.
I also think it's one of the most influential horror movies of the last 10 years. Like the sorts of things that we're seeing in horror today are way more related to High Tension than like your more standard like go to the movies fair. Right. Especially with the sorts of filmmakers who are popular now, or at least are the indie darlings that we tend to gravitate towards. So, like that sense of there's just a sense of very personal dread that's in that movie that's not in a lot of horror movies. It's not like it's gory and disturbing, but it's not. I don't think it's gory and disturbing for the sake of being gory and disturbing. There's some real high tension in the early part of that movie.
And I think his Hills Have Eyes remake is good.
Yeah. Especially I like it. I kind of like it better than the original, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
His real misstep of the ones I've seen, because I think Piranha still has some fun moments to it.
Well, I think Piranha was meant to be fun.
Right. And that's why it has some fun parts too. Some of them don't work, is the thing. But,
sure.
And this kind of marries those two kind of ideas together. Like, this one has some. It is definitely fun and, like, smirking a little bit. And I kind of like that. In that it's not. I mean, it's not like a traditional horror movie, but I do like that it kind of smirks at the audience a little bit, but not. It doesn't, like, break the fourth wall too much. So that's definitely an enjoyable part of it.
I mentioned to Drew, too, that it just. It feels like it belongs in the young adult category of films. Like it feels like it belongs in right alongside Horns? The Twilight universe.
Horns or
Horns?
Why is that? Like, yeah, explain that. What do you mean?
The rape.
It's the rape. I don't. It's the idea of this young love that is the overpowering story. Really, it's not. I mean, Daniel Iggy is Ig, right?
Iggy. Mm-hmm. Ig Parrish.
So Iggy is accused of raping and murdering his girlfriend, and the movie unfolds and him trying to figure out who did it, but. The overall theme is this true love that is not what it seems, and also, you know, it's kind of a spiritual ending with the idea of what happens at the very end.
But wasn't the true love always what it seemed? I mean, that's the thing.
Well, the true love was true, but we were led to believe that it wasn't.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because it was so true.
Right.
Because she's so perfect and, you know.
But it's full of the ideas. I mean, these aren't the people in their, you know, 30s, you know, in their 30s talking about stuff. These are young kids, basically kids, you know, getting ready to start their lives together.
Yeah, this is not a middle-aged couple who has sort of settled into just like a passive hatred of one another.
And
I certainly agree with you. Like, it's like a right post high school kind of.
Yeah, like right after high school, you have this idea that, you know, this is the girl I'm going to be with forever.
Right.
It's kind of like Twilight for assholes like us.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, exactly.
Twilight for assholes.
It's like Twilight, the after high school years, and they're like, I've made a huge mistake.
I've got cancer. Is that in the book, Drew? Do you remember that being in the book?
Yeah.
In Twilight or in Horns?
It's in both. Yeah, Twilight too, yeah.
Yeah,
Twilight is a cancer.
She got like canthro... What's the can like cancerotropy?
Neuroblastoma?
Like
a glioma.
But yeah, no, it was. It had been a while since I read it, so I had to kind of bone up on the book afterwards just to make sure I remembered everything. But yeah, that was her reasoning there as well. I mean, and that's, I think, one of the things, like when I was looking back at the book, it was reminding me, I think one of the biggest weaknesses the movie ends up having is Lee. Because we don't get enough of Lee. The one thing we get much more of in the book is Lee Turner. Yeah.
Lee Turner.
Thank you. I don't know why that wouldn't come out.
Mary
right.
Kay Lee Turner.
Yeah, kind of.
And he just and we didn't get that backstory with him that really kind of fleshed him out and made him more than just what he ends up being in the book. Is, I mean, he's the friend until he's the not.
Not the friend.
Yeah.
Let me also.
Because like all the stuff with him saving Ig's life, he made such a huge deal about it in the book, and it's just like we see the scene of him saving his life, and it never becomes. It's not the impetus for him. The rest of the book and everything he does with Lee is feeling bad about that and wanting to make up for that, and we don't really see that at all ever in the movie. We don't even need that scene honestly in the movie because it never really comes back into play.
So.
Well, it's meant to dissuade you from thinking that he is the killer. Right. Ultimately, but I mean, sorry.
But I don't think you need that to even accomplish that in the movie. You just don't give us the idea that he could be the killer for a while. Like no one even mentions him as the idea of the killer. So I mean, it's not like we're even leaning that way. And it's like, no, man, no, he saved my life. It couldn't be him
because he steps in at very key points in the story to go like, hey, buddy, I'm here to help you. I'm your lawyer.
Right, yeah.
So, Ig, Daniel Radcliffe's character, we start the movie with him being accused of this crime. Everyone hates him. And then it's not long after that where he wakes up in the morning and finds that he has horns growing from his head.
It's kind of the Nightmare on Elm Street 4 way of getting horns, too, because he gets them the night after he pisses on her memorial.
Yes. So he starts getting horns, and then oddly, everyone starts telling... Everyone is very truthful to him, which is... I mean, I probably one of the high points of the movie is just how like fucking nuts everyone's confessions are. And,
I expected more of them. Like, there were more in the book, and they were more, like, scandalous. So I kind of expected more of that from it, yeah.
My favorite was the doctor.
Yes.
When he's like, oh, God, you patients are all assholes.
It's always about you.
And I think that's where the movie, I think that's where it is being its most successful because,
yeah.
I mean, for one, I mean, Daniel Radcliffe's, his reactions to this, to that's perfect as Ig is like, I don't care what you do. When these people yeah. are asking him, can I do this? He's like, I don't give a shit because he doesn't understand what's going on at first. When, I especially love when Glenna is asking him, can I eat this donut? He's like, I don't care.
Right. And
eat
that
donuts.
It took me until he went to the doctor's office to realize what was
yeah,
happening. Like, first, like, I guess she just really likes him and wants his approval. And like, do you care if I eat this?
Yeah, Kate had the same thing. She was like, "Is she the? Because she likes to figure out movies, so she was like, "Is she the killer? Is she crazy? Is that why?" I was like, "So I had I kind of had to explain the premise to her." But after that, yeah, what's weird about this movie is I was going to laud it because I was like, "Oh, it doesn't get into a lot of the backstory because it's so short." But it's not. It's 2 hours long.
It's 2 hours long. Yeah, if it were shorter, I'd be okay with that as yeah. an excuse.
If they cut 30 minutes out of it, I'd be like, "Well, we don't really need the backstory." And people say, like, how this movie is 2 hours and still it still feels anemic as a movie even at 2 hours, which is it's weird.
2 hours, and that's what's what's weird about it. And that's, I think, part of its problem is
yeah,
there's stuff in there that doesn't need to be in there. But mm-hmm. if you're gonna be that long, there's stuff to add that you could flesh that out much better. It could be told better, I think, at that rate.
Yeah.
At least that's a screenplay issue, I think.
So in the book, do they explain the appearance of the snakes better?
No.
No.
They just kind of appear, like they follow him, and the book is, I mean, the movie is like filled with religious imagery. It doesn't right, feel right. as sort of cornpone in the book as it does in the movie. Like whenever you see the restaurant, it's like Eve's Garden, you're like, oh, okay. Isn't a video game, BioShock. So it feels less overt and obvious in the book for some reason. But in the movie, yeah, it's like, oh, here's more snakes, I guess, because that's obviously, and like it got really corny for me at the end when he picks up a pitchfork. I'm like, oh fuck, yeah, that's really obvious, isn't it? He's literally becoming the devil.
Is that the thing? Is he supposed to be the devil or a demon?
No, I mean it's not. I mean it's these whole ideas are coming up in it, but I don't think it's ever really established that he was. That's what I was gonna pull up.
You be okay with that gift?
What do you mean?
People giving you the truth, like just the honest truth.
No,
yeah, technically
no,
they're not getting
I don't,
about
no.
him.
If I could add the cool horns to go along with it.
No,
sure.
Okay, yeah, no, the whole thing. You get
yeah,
the
I
horns.
The cool
and
horns, though, yeah.
I don't. I wouldn't want that at all. Like, I no. wouldn't want. I don't want people telling me that kind of shit. Like, I want people to keep. Like, I'm almost northeastern in my view of like privacy and stuff. Like, I don't want everybody telling me their shit. Like, just deal with it.
It's awful, especially when his parents are too.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
That's
yeah.
terrible.
I did forget about that.
I wouldn't want to know the like all the things that I joke about because I just it's like that insecure need for to be like patted on the head. Like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Right.
Because
sure.
If people actually told you the things that they're actually thinking, no, I would be destroyed by it. I would jump off a fucking bridge if I had that power.
So I'm going back up to see my family on Thanksgiving for a week. I'm going to pretend like I'm Daniel Radcliffe in horns and just be.
Are you
going to
wear your horns?
I'm going to wear my horns and I'm just going to be completely honest the whole time. Like,
wait, but
it's
no,
impossible.
That's not how it works. He wasn't completely.
No,
honest.
But I'm not going to try to explain the movie to them. So I'm going to do that.
Like I mean, I went through a phase like that where I was like, I'm just going to be completely honest with people and just be forthright and upfront.
Can
it's just
imagine what an asshole Tyler was during that time. Talks to you.
Not in that sort of like stream of consciousness, like William Faulkner on display kind of way, but just like if someone asks me a question, I'm just going to be honest and say like, right. whatever. And it's
that
just sure so
it is ugly.
It is easy to say that you can do that, but I don't think that's any more virtuous than like telling shades of lies. Like I think telling shades of lies is in some ways more virtuous than just being blunt and honest at all times. Like I try to be as honest as possible, but there are times when I just don't tell the entire truth because it just doesn't like it doesn't improve the situation. It doesn't improve like how I am interacting with this person. So I just feel like this sort of honesty is crazy.
No, I agree. I mean, I agree there. I mean, with exactly what you're saying. I mean, there's something to be said for the little white lies of life that allow us to go through and exist in society. I mean, granted, some of those people were covering up some big fucking fat black lies, you know. Yeah. But that was, you know. But,
I also don't have like.
You didn't murder
secret,
someone.
Yeah, like I don't have like a secret addiction. Like I don't have some compulsion. Like I'm lying because I want to be on TV. I deserve my own reality show.
So what I get from this conversation is what you're saying is when someone says, "How does this look?" and you say, "It's fine." We know what you really think.
I mean, that's.
Sometimes you just want to get out of the house. Right. How does this look? It's fine. Let's go.
Let's go. I mean, it's. I don't know. Like it sort of greases the wheels of like just moving things along. Like, can you imagine how things would grind to a halt if you were just like, go put on something else?
Oh God, you look like shit. Go back in.
I'm not going out like this. Yeah. No. I mean it. That sort of blunt honesty just would never work. Like it's like America as an idea and we as a people are just so sort of like codified in this garbage that it's just like, yeah, it's fine. That's how we do. That's how we live. This is who we are. Just telling these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Certainly the most entertaining, I think, section of the movie as far as just pure entertainment value went. And I mean, like you said, the scene with the doctor, the scene at the bar, I mean, when he tells the reporters, whoever wins gets the exclusive interview. I mean, that was a fantastic.
I did enjoy it. That was a good part. Yeah,
it just seems like the movie could have more fun with itself.
I think after that, that's where it kind of loses its fun after that, and it just doesn't. I think it just kind of meanders after that. As he's trying to solve the crime because it's not focused in his solving of it. He does find out about Heather Graham's character, but I think that scene ends up that whole sequence ends up underwhelming. She doesn't really add
nothing
anything.
Comes of it. She gets
that really felt unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean the book is a lot more cohesive a thing than the movie is for sure. Because in the book, doesn't he go back to the priest and like doesn't the priest get a comeuppance in the book at a certain like at some point? I thought that. I don't remember. God, it's been so long.
The priest offers to hang him or something like that.
Priest tells him to hang himself. But he also offers to hang him. But he says it would be better if you just did it yourself. Because you're an asshole.
Gotcha.
Who deserves to die.
I mean, I think they make a lot of times making adaptations is one thing. Yeah. But I think some of the changes here weren't necessary. I mean, I think taking Terry out of the
conspiracy.
Direct line of fire for the murder was one. I mean, was a weakness.
He's the cop, right?
The brother.
Oh yeah.
And taking him completely out of. I mean, he was there. He sees it happen, and the whole reason he doesn't ever say anything or do anything is because Lee, in the movie, as we see, Lee unframes him without him knowing it, and I think that's a lot weaker than. Him in the book, he knows what happened and he won't tell because he's so afraid of losing. Remember, he has a TV show. He's the musician who has the tour, it's a TV show or tour, something like that going on. And he's going to lose that and he's afraid of losing that if they find out. So it makes it much more of a selfish decision on his part that he knows the truth but won't tell it because Lee says, well, I'm just going to, you're going to lose everything you have. And so he allows his brother to, not quite take the fall, but essentially be taking the fall at that point. And I think that's a much more compelling way than this whole, oh, what happened? I got blood all over me. And how did this happen? I don't know what happened. Then you get with the brother, takes a lot of his, again, it takes his purpose for existing out of it. There's no need for him to be there. If he wasn't there for it, his being framed for it added nothing to it.
It's also like, the movie is not quite as mean to its characters. It like too many of the characters are like come off. They don't come off good. I mean, the brother doesn't come off looking very shiny at the end of this. But at the same time, it's not as mean. Like it is entirely more like optimistic a movie than the book is. Like the book is way darker than the movie, and I did not expect. I didn't really expect that.
Yeah, I think I was. I think I was. Yeah, I agree. I think I was thinking it was going to end up being somehow darker by the time it was over.
I mean, I just remember the ending of the book being really brutal. And it wasn't like the movie was not quite. I also like in the book, the sort of like head fake with Ig's death is done differently, or is it in there at all? I don't remember. Like where they set him, yeah, when they set him on fire, does that happen in the book, Drew? I don't remember. But it doesn't work.
Hanging out for 1 second. We're going to read this.
It doesn't work. We're going to read the last 30 pages of the book aloud. I just don't think it works as well in the movie to have that kind of head fake, because it just doesn't, like, it just stops the narrative too much unless you have some other reason for having it. It just doesn't work.
After we are told what happens as far as what's the girl's name? What's his girlfriend's name? It's not Eve, is it?
Who?
No.
Ig's girlfriend.
Marin,
that's it.
As in father, Marin.
Gotcha. I felt that she was a huge asshole for what she was doing.
I see what you're saying, but like in what way?
Well, we're led to believe that she is leaving. I mean, we're led to believe that she's leaving Ig for just no reason at all.
Yeah.
Which would feed into the fact that maybe she was, you know, banging dudes on the side.
Right.
But I don't know if I would find this relief in knowing that, oh, she did this because of her terminal disease that was going to cause her suffering, and she didn't want me to suffer through it. It still feels kind of shitty to me. It's like, well, that's not your decision to make, asshole.
Right. I kind of see that. Like,
it's a very Lifetime movie.
It's a very Lifetime movie, and it's very, like, that's what I'm saying, the young adult idea of, like, oh, this is the best for everyone.
It's almost like a Nicholas Sparks plot device.
Right.
I mean, the person dying of cancer.
So when does her father know she's got the cancer?
The cancer. I don't remember. I wouldn't think so.
I can't remember if, like, when Ig came back in with his, you know, his burned body, the horns, he has a conversation with her father. If her father says he gives him a key, mm-hmm. but does the father realize what's going on at that point?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, it just seems like that's a good point. I didn't think of that at all, but I don't think he would have, but in the end, it doesn't matter. Like, to him, it wouldn't matter. She's dead, right? Like, his goal
he looks horrible in that death scene.
Oh, that rock.
Yeah, that was rough.
Wait, what?
The death scene, Marin's death scene.
Yeah. Well, he's just there to care about his daughter, so he doesn't really care how she's dead. He's not going to go like, oh, now I have to care. Like, I don't think Ig did it. He's just like, my daughter's dead, so like, to hell with all of it. You know what I mean?
Byers cares.
John Mark Byers.
Maybe kind of the ideas there. Yeah, when he found out.
Yeah, it's true.
He changed.
You're right. So maybe if the father then sees the news and is like, "Oh, Ig, you are all right.
You're okay."
Maybe I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, the more I talk about this movie, the less I like it. So maybe we should stop podcasting. So
too late. Nope.
No, I feel the same with you, Tyler. I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the film as I watched it. I had some problems with it, but right. I mean, shit. It's shot in Vancouver, correct? I mean, who doesn't want to live in that place? That place is fucking beautiful. Yeah.
Well, that's Canada.
And like, it's Canada. Like the Vancouver, the Portland of Canada.
Yeah, I mean,
you mean the New York of Canada?
Is that what Vancouver is?
Well, that's where they shoot everything now. Isn't that where they shot Rumble in the Bronx?
Oh, right.
It is kind of like the horror Twilight. Brian, the more I think about it, the more I agree with you, and like, come back, circle back around to the idea that you might be right about this. This is kind of like, it's kind of like a punk rock love song, where it's just like, it has all this violent outer shell, but at the heart of it, it's just like this really heartbreaking tale.
That melancholy, like, love tale.
Tale, because, I mean,
it's a Romeo and Juliet.
The characters are, like, Ig is obviously a messed up character. He has a lot of flaws, but he's essentially perfect. His biggest flaw is pride, and, like, he falls prey to wrath. But Marin as a character is, she's entirely flawless, and it just, I kind of hate stories like that where it's like, oh no, actually, there was actually nothing wrong with this character. She had no flaws, and that is her only flaw. And I kind of hate that she's, is it a Mary Sue when a character has no flaws? Is that what that's called?
Selfishness is her flaw.
Do you think so?
In consideration.
I think she was acting out of selflessness, though. I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm not arguing there. I think it's a poor decision when people make decisions for other people in that regard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to let you. She's a martyr. Like, essentially, she's a martyr.
Because of her selfishness,
she pays for it.
She pays for it. And it causes a domino effect of what happens next is that, you know, if she hadn't had this fight with Ig, then maybe Lee would not have shown up to, you know, confess his love to her. And she was not asking for it in that sense. But what I'm saying is that she started this chain that led to her demise.
Agreed. Yes.
By trying to be a good person and showing Ig, like, oh, well, see.
She's not, she did not cause this, but, she did not cause this. And she's not. She's not really to blame for her. Like, the movie sort of tiptoes around this idea.
No, Lee is the problem. But what I'm saying is that her trying to save Ig's
feelings.
There's three different there's three outcomes. There's either Ig thinks he left her. She left him to go to L.A. He's heartbroken. She stays with Ig. Tells him he has cancer. She dies painfully. He's heartbroken. She tells him she's going to L.A. She's then killed in the woods by Ig's best friend, Lee. Ig is heartbroken. There's never a scenario where he is not destroyed in that. You know, he's always going to get the raw end of that deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think...
She dies.
She gets the rawest end.
Yeah, she gets the rawest end of the deal.
Right.
I mean,
goes to L.A. with some other dude she likes banging more.
But then Ig is still heartbroken.
Right, but I'm just saying, at that point, that's the only way she doesn't get the raw end of the deal.
Yes.
I just think, like, I agree with you, Brian, that it is this situation that sets it off. But I do not think that it is... That is not her tragic flaw. Like, she doesn't have a tragic flaw. She is utterly flawless in this film. Like, she has no flaw.
I understand what you're saying. Like, she is presented in this idea that she is basically an angel.
But the set of events occur because of her decision. But that doesn't, like, she doesn't have it coming, but that particular line of events occur because of that. Like, it does kind of create a domino effect. But I mean, I think that is the tragic aspect of it, is that, you know, and I guess I'm just repeating what you said, but in her attempt to be selfless, like, that, all of that happened.
Right.
Not that there was, like, you can't assign any sort of blame to it, but those are the events that happen. Just like in almost any case where someone is murdered, like, there is a set of events. Like, someone decided to go to a convenience store at 9 o'clock at night to get, you know, whatever, like, to get a soda and some chips, and it ends up getting shot. Like, that's not that person's fault. That is not that person's flaw.
No, yeah, it's true.
But it's just that is what happens. Like,
and I'm completely not saying, like, what Drew says, like, you know, the idea that she was asking for.
Yeah,
that's not saying. Is that,
of course? No, you weren't. Definitely weren't.
I think you make a good point in the fact that, like you said. And she didn't think through the idea there that pretty much no matter what, the end result will be the same.
Well, she didn't think she would be murdered. Like, that was never
the last one where she's raped and murdered.
Right. Yeah. Well, which made
he is accused of it.
Right. And makes his life a living hell. Which is, it ties me into my whole problem with Twilight is that, you know, it even goes as far back as Romeo and Juliet, which I'm interested in. Like,
misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding and the naivete of youth.
Yeah.
Is it, I don't, there's no, at 17, 18, Kristen Stewart knew that she was going to spend the rest of her life.
The beauty of that story is not in how it is told, because it's obviously a very poorly told story, but the naivete of it is what is so alluring to teenagers, because when we were 17, most of us were with someone or had, like, a sort of, like, fleeting relationship with someone. We're like, man, this is how it's going to feel forever. And that book, series and the movies that came from them, they bask in that idea that like, it's real forever. Yeah. Loved, so yeah. I think that's why people like it. It's not because it's a great story, because it's obviously a shitty story.
Well, I would say that maybe my problem with Horns, and which I mean, I really did like the film, is that after thinking about it for a while, my advanced age became a problem, because I started thinking like, well, these fucking kids.
Well,
like,
that's
off your lawn, though, right?
Yeah. Well, no, it's that same thing with like, at a level, I understand that feeling. I mean, I've that idea that when you're young, you think, oh my, it's all right now, and this is it. There's nothing else. But at the same time, as you get older, you realize, oh.